Chapter 11. Skitterwombles in the Sarcophobulus.
"Yeah, but you don't understand,"
Ivan Boldershoulder told Queen Malabrich's battlehammer.
"This is the sarcophagus of Thibbledorf Puent, the Puent."
"Sarcophobulus,"
giggled Pickle, who was standing on the ladder opposite.
"Hee hee hee."
"Oh, but we're understanding well enough," Queen Tannabridges replied. "We're understanding a pair of dwarfs standing on ladders in our husband's throne room, not 20 steps from the throne of the dwarven gods, trying to tear down a monument King Brunner put there. What's not for understanding, ye dern boulder shoulder skitterwombles?"
"Why, we're doing it," said Ivan.
"Skitterwombles into sarcophobulus, hee hee hee," Pickle proclaimed.
The other three sighed in unison.
"Because ye're hoping Brunner'll put his fist in your eye?"
Malabrich's guest.
"Bah," Ivan snorted.
"Ye're bats," Malabrich's declared.
"Nah, but we're thinking Puent might be,"
Ivan replied, and the Gontalgrim queens looked at each other curiously. Before either could respond, the throne room, which was just inside the wall before the entry cavern's dark pond, shook under the weight of an explosion out in that vast cavern, and a sentry dwarf kicked open the outer door.
"Fightin'," he yelled. "Demons come charging back, to arms!"
"Brunner's out there with Jarlaxle and Driz Sta,"
Tannabridges told her sister, and the two rushed to gather their weapons and armor.
"Well, let's go smack some demons," Ivan said to Pickle, but Pickle shook his head and waggled the finger back at his brother.
"Ah,
ye heard him."
Pickle didn't seem to be listening, instead working at one of the latches at the back of the sarcophagus, which they had loosened from the wall.
"Ye really think it?" Ivan asked.
Yup.
The fastened sarcophagus shifted just a bit as Pickle wedged his hand in behind. Ivan crinkled his face, thinking his brother was about to grasp the butt end of a rotting body.
"Nope,"
Pickle said.
"Nope, what? He ain't in there."
"Nope,"
the dwarf repeated, wagging his green-haired head.
"Well, where?"
Ivan demanded. In response, Pickle gave a great open-mouthed hiss, bringing his one hand to his mouth, two fingers pointing down to mimic vampire fangs.
"Stop with that!"
"Hee hee hee, nope."
Ivan sighed.
"Ah, ye dumb Puent, what are ye about?" he whispered.
He grasped the outer supports of the ladder and slid quickly down the 15 feet to the floor, while Pickle relatched and reset the sarcophagus. Old Ivan Boldershoulder scratched his yellow beard, not really knowing how he was going to tell his friend Brunner that they might have yet another problem. Another explosion shook the room. Ivan gathered up his axe. First things first. From the high deck of the tram station across the underground pond, Brunner watched the unfolding battle in the huge and high-ceilinged cave. At this point, the action was all far in the back, with flames exploding and lightning bolts flashing, the bits of sudden light inevitably showing the misshapen forms of demonic foot soldiers. Horns blew notes of coordinated defense for the dwarven strategic positions, and shouts echoed, begging reinforcements at one stalagmite or another, or calls for retreat at positions sure to be quickly overrun. Brunner tried hard to put those horns and shouts out of his mind. His forces had practiced and practiced for this day. They knew their roles, when to fight, how to fight, when to fall back, which positions to let go and which to hold to the last dwarf. Brunner, too, had a role, right here, at the last line of defense before the wall of Gontalgrim itself. Thibbledorf Puent was lost to him. Atheragate and Ambergris were lost to him. Dag Nabbit was queen of Mithril Hall and could not get to his side until those magical gates were at last opened. Drizzt was out there somewhere. Wulfgar wasn't here but in Luskan. Nor was Regis, who had ridden for Waterdeep, nor Catti Bree, very pregnant and home in Longsaddle. The dwarf king felt very much alone. He glanced to his right, where Jarlaxle and Zacnaphane had gone over the wall.
"So it's come to this," he muttered.
But he didn't let any doubts diminish his stubborn and unyielding determination. He was Brunner, king.
King Brunner, who had gone forth into Keepersdale to turn back an army. He was King Brunner, who had reclaimed Mithril Hall and brought it to new heights of prosperity and acclaim, who had reclaimed Gauntlegrim in control of the godlike primordial which powered the most magical forge in Faerûn. He was King Brunner, who had united, or would soon unite, the Delzoon dwarves into a singular force, unbeatable. Still, he felt much better when two old friends rushed up to join him on that tram platform, centered on the outer wall, across the small pond from Gauntlegrim proper.
"Dare, dare!"
Pickle implored his brother, pointing to a patch of ground between the tram wall and the lake, over to the right, near where the two drow had gone out.
"Me brother wants ye to—"
Ivan began, but stopped as Pickle interrupted with,
"Me brudder!"
"Aye, he wants ye to bring in your dwarfs through the gate to the right," Ivan finished, pointing to the spot Pickle had indicated. "He's got a bit of surprise to hold any demons chasing them in, one that'll serve him up for your crossbows and catapults."
Bruno looked from one boulder shoulder to the other, finally nodding to assure them that he trusted them.
"And here, if I might," said Ivan, hoisting a large bandolier full of heavy crossbow quarrels of unusual design. He pulled one from the chain and held it up for Brunner to see. "Old design," he explained. "One made by Catterley."
"Catterley, boom," said Pickle.
"Aye, boom,"
Ivan agreed, pointing to the open center of the large bolt, which held a tiny flask filled with some liquid and supported only by thin lines of metal from the front half to the back.
"When it hits, it folds. When it folds,
boom,"
Pickle happily explained.
"Oil of impact," Ivan remarked. "Sure that it'll be leaving a mark."
"Spread them around, good dwarf," Brunner told Ivan.
"Dare, dare,"
Pickle reiterated, pointing his one arm frantically at the spot to the right.
"Aye, dare,"
Brunner played along, using the dwarf's own word.
"He he he."
"Look for the light," Brunner shouted to his commanders along the wall. "Tell your boys all about the cavern that we got friends directing their fire."
"Where are ye needing us, me king?"
came a call from behind, a woman's voice, and Brunner spun about to see his two queens, aptly nicknamed Fist and Fury, hustling up to join him on the platform. Battle-scarred and full of as much fight as Thibeldorf Puent at a goblin inn, the powerful and battle-ready sister queens surely bolstered Brunner's spirits.
"Ride with meself," he told them, and indeed he needed them, and the boulder shoulders as well.
King Brunner Battlehammer nodded and puffed out his muscular chest. He was not alone. Flipping and spinning, wall to floor, floor to wall, Jarlaxle and Zacnephane crossed paths with every dart and tumble, the swords of one always covering for the movements of the other. They passed demons large and small, scored hits big and little, and were always gone before anything could touch them, running free, as Zacnephane put it, around the next stalagmite, somersaulting, vaulting, flipping and sprinting, a growling horde of angry demons in hot pursuit. "Bleeding line," Jarlaxle called, coming down one expanse, a straight and wide run culminating in a pair of thick stalagmites with walkways built up high. Zacnephane reached into his pouch and produced a handful of pellets, ceramic balls specially coated with enchanted oil to harness the energy within. He dropped them behind him, confident one of the horde not far behind would crush the casing, releasing the magic. Up to the right he ran, gaining height on the slope of a mound, then leaping and spinning from it to land in a dead run, crossing Jarlaxle's path as the mercenary leader similarly rushed the other way. The avenue behind them lit up as the pursuing demon horde trampled the pellets, releasing the brilliant magical light enclosed within. Response was almost instantaneous, dwarven slide-slinger catapults letting fly and ballista bolts vibrating the air above the heads of the leading drow pair. Behind the companions, demon minions died by the score under the barrage. Around a huge mound the drow pair went, then across a side channel and around another, turning now and heading generally back toward Gauntlegrim, looking for another suitable causeway for carnage. From a side position not far from the running pair, Drizzt watched his father and friend with mounting admiration and joy.
joy to see his father so willingly risking his life for the cause of the goodly folk of the crags. With Tolmeril the Heartseeker in hand, the ranger measured the progress of the two running drow, marveling at their coordination and movements, immediately deciphering the elements inciting their seemingly random flips and crosses. Drizzt passed behind a stalagmite mound, the pair coming into view as they rounded a wider turn before him, then noticed an intercepting group of flying chasme demons. Away went his arrows, streaking silver with the power of magical lightning, skimming just behind Zacnaphane and Jarlaxle to catch the distracted demons right in their bulbous faces. Down went the chasmes, spinning and crashing, one after another, and as the last of his barrage flew away, Drizzt turned and twisted the magical bow, breaking it down once more so that it would fit into his belt buckle as he sprinted away. Around another bend came Jarlaxle and Zacnaphane, and this time, a third companion jumped into their midst, twirling past Zacnaphane as he leaped, landing right before Jarlaxle and sprinting along to keep up with the running pair. "Orbs!" Jarlaxle called as they rounded another bend, coming in sight of the outer defensive wall to the left of the tram station. He and Zacnaphane somersaulted past each other, both pulling forth handfuls of the light-encasing ceramic balls, while Drizzt rushed off to the side, finding a shadowed cubby along a stalagmite mound and drawing forth his magical bow from the buckle of his belt once more. On came the pursuing demons, ravenously, too focused to realize that they were once again crushing light pellets, revealing their position. Catapult balls and ballista bolts charged down the avenue at them, laying waste, melting and impaling, and the carnage was made worse by the drow ranger with the recurved bow off to the side, as Drizzt O'Urden let fly arrow after arrow, missiles made all the more powerful by the stalled horde of demons, for the arrows of Tolmeril blew through their first targets to score deadly hits on the next in line, and even the third on many occasions. Demons melted under that withering barrage, and it took a long while for them to catch on to the presence of Drizzt and his bow. When they did, the chase took on a new dimension, but Drizzt was ready for them. "Guinevere, I need you," he beckoned to his magical statuette, and the gray mist collected behind him as the loyal panther came to his call, forming right before a charging vrock and taking down the vulture-like demon as easily as a real leopard might take down a rooster. On ran Drizzt, scimitars drawn. He noted another area lit up by magical ceramic balls, and the whole of the cavern then shook with the booming resonance of side-slinger catapults. He jumped to the top of a low wall, noted a Marilith demon, six-armed and with each hand holding a sword, and moved to intercept. Drizzt veered right for her, leaping to a low stone, flipping from it to drive in hard at the creature, his blades neatly ringing against her multi-pronged attack. Out went his right-hand blade, icing death, driving wide three of the Marilith demon's swords, then past them and back again, picking off the attacks as the demon swept its various weapons back in. Down and over went the scimitar, and Drizzt turned and kicked out high and fast, his foot slamming the demon in the face, dazing it. With a hiss of protest, the Marilith lifted all six arms high and wide, like a crowning eagle about to devour its prey. But then the creature was flying backward, hit by a living missile of muscle, claws, and fangs. Drizzt couldn't wait, and on he ran, firing shot after shot to light up the path before him and clear it of demons, and soon enough, Guinevere was running beside him. He was separated again from Jarlaxle and his father, but they didn't need him, and indeed, in watching their precision, he feared that his presence might trip them all up. They knew he was here too, now running and shooting, leaping along the stalagmite mounds and turning too often and too fast for any of the invaders to take up a serious chase. And if they did, Drizzt knew this cavern better than any. He knew where the dwarven crossbowmen perched and knew, too, the lanes for the catapults and ballista. The demons were about to pay a steep price for chasing him. Demon fire roared through the cavern. Formations of chasmes flew for the stalactites, many hollowed and set with crossbowmen and spotters. Rushing at them, demons faced withering fire, bolt after bolt taking the flying monsters down.
but there were too many, and for all the carnage in the hall, almost all of it inflicted upon the invaders, the dwarves were forced back again and again, scrambling along ceiling tunnels to the next defensive position. And as those positions tightened, more dwarves were forced all the way back beyond the tram wall, sliding down smooth poles within constructed chutes.
"Farthest third's lost," Macorbus Gemcutter told his king and two queens up on that wall.
"Did they all get out?" Brunner asked.
The dwarf, bleeding from a host of scratches and bruises from scrambling fast along the tight stone tunnels, offered only a shrug.
"Didn't see none die, but I heard some screams, dwarf screams."
Brunner nodded grimly and patted the dwarf on the shoulder, then looked out at the cavern as the battle inched closer.
"We'll be holding them here, don't ye doubt," Queen Tannebriches said.
"Aye, and then we'll drive him back across the hall and up the tunnel, and might that I'll run a tram over him in the causeway just for the fun of it."
From somewhere not far to the side, a crossbow clicked.
"Hold your shots, boys," Brunner yelled, then added to those near. "Might be more of our own coming in."
He looked to his queens and nodded, and the two darted away to spread the word. They had barely gone a running stride, though, when there came a blinding flash followed by a thunderous retort out in the cavern, up high along the ceiling. Stones fell and dwarves fell behind them from on high.
"They're finding the crawl tunnels," Brunner cried. "Get your bows up and ready, Ivan!"
He looked back and to the side to see the Boulder Shoulder brothers standing by the dark pond between the tram platform and the right-hand wall.
"We'll have boys coming in fast," Brunner shouted to them.
Ivan pointed straight ahead to the gates on that side of the wall, before which he and Pickle had just been walking.
"Them," the old Yellowbeard yelled back to Brunner. "Bring 'em in through them doors."
Ivan spun and gave a shrill whistle, and Brunner looked back across the small pond to see dozens of dwarves readying heavy crossbows. Another huge explosion rocked the cavern, and fires blew out from one hollowed stalagmite mound, side-slinger catapults falling from its sides in flames.
"Juicers!" Brunner called.
His well-trained forces were already on it, rolling the heavy, crushing machines over the pond's bridge, then down a forking trail to the main gate's doors. The machines were nothing more than huge, flat-nosed rams, with long poles extending out the back to be held by a team of running dwarves. It was hard to get one of those things rolling with any speed, but harder still to stop it once one had.
"Your brothers and sisters will be coming fast," Brunner shouted to the dwarves lining the parapets. "With demons right behind and demons flying above, ye give them dogs a fast trip to the hell what spawned them."
Zacnaphane ran up high and leaped out, throwing his arms and legs wide to shorten the jump, which landed him several strides from a powerful boar-like demon. The ravenous beast leaped at him in blind fury, too hungry to even realize the second form, the one taking advantage of Zacnaphane's shortened leap. Jarlaxle flashed between the demon and Zacnaphane, cutting from left to right before his friend, his swords working furiously as he crossed, and as soon as he went beyond weapon's reach, he began pumping his arm, fist throwing a sword, then creating dagger after dagger in his hand from his magical wrist pouch, a line of stinging missiles streaming out at the demon. The strange creature, which ran hunched, almost on all fours, squealed with each hit, but somehow managed to keep its focus on Zacnaphane and charged ahead. But Zacnaphane wasn't there, flipping an easy cartwheel to his left, but turning in mid-spin, landing, planting, and coming right back in. He caught the demonic beast as it turned, getting in behind its thrashing tusks, his fine swords quickly finishing the task Jarlaxle had started. As the demon fell aside, already melting and smoking as its vile life force sank back to the lower planes, Zacnaphane noted that Jarlaxle's expression was hardly one of victory.
"Our game nears its end," Jarlaxle said, nodding his chin over to the left, deeper into the cavern behind Zacnaphane.
When the weapon master turned, he understood, for the demons were organizing well, driving the dwarves from one entrenchment after another. Crossbows clacked on the outer wall, the tram wall.
"Left of the tram," Brunner said, Zacnaphane reminded him.
Let's bring the dwarves a host to slaughter.
They're already fighting at the wall, Jarlaxle said. The dwarves might be in full retreat.
How much do you trust this King Brunner?
Jarlaxle gave a little grin. Let's bring them a host.
Off the two ran, deeper into the cavern, a circling route that would turn them back to the tram wall, all the way over to the left side of the vast chamber. They took care not to fully engage any monsters anymore. Their goal was to taunt, not to get bogged down in any fights. They cut fast corners and leaped up high. Zacnaphane slid down on his knees under the wind-whipping cut of a giant hammer, wielded by the thickly muscled arms of a huge and squat beast that came out from one side alley swinging. Jarlaxle leaped instead, actually touching down briefly atop that hammer, and diving away into a somersault and roll that brought him right back to his feet in a dead run.
You have your toy?
Zacnaphane cried when a host of Khazmays and other flying fiends appeared overhead, diving at them. Down went Jarlaxle, tumbling and coming around with a strange-looking wheel-like object in his hand and a sly smile on his face.
Sometimes I have too many toys to remember, he said, working fast to take four feathers off the object and stick the tips of their shafts into holes set equidistantly within the inner wheel of the object.
Akkadi, he said, the command word and also the name of a powerful aerial being, as he started to run off once more, Zacnaphane pulling him along. Jarlaxle took care to hold the item far from him as the feathers spun faster and faster, creating a small vortex. He struggled to hold it and seemed to struggle with something more, Zacnaphane noted, as if Jarlaxle was afraid of the power he now held.
Do it, the weapon master yelled, and Jarlaxle growled and clenched hard, yelling the command word more insistently, demanding everything the item could offer.
Now he held the bottom tip of a tornado, and he swept it above and about, sending the aerial demons flying and spinning every which way. He lowered it back the way they had come, thinking to scatter the nearest pursuers, but as soon as the item went sidelong, the enchantment simply ceased. But it had been enough to gain them some time.
Run, Zacnaphane cried, and they did. A horde of demons, lesser fiends by the score, and even a few powerful beings like Vrock and Glabrezu, and other misshapen monsters, huge and terrible, came on in thunderous pursuit.
Driz dove to the floor and rolled, appearing desperate to get aside from the demonic flames flowing out from what seemed to be the powerful commander of this assault, a hulking bipedal monstrosity, creating a field of flames about itself and wielding a shining red sword and a whip that crackled with lightning.
A Baelor. The same Baelor he had fled outside the tram station up above.
Driz knew this type of demon quite well, for he had battled them, and one in particular, Air Two, on several occasions. He knew their flame shields rolling out from their massive bodies, curling and puffing with every stamp of the monster's foot. He knew their terrible whips. He knew. But this particular Baelor didn't know him, it seemed, for he could hear its victorious laughter as he rolled and squirmed through the flames. Because if the demon did know who it was dealing with, it would know those flames couldn't touch Driz Doerden, not while he was holding Icing Death, a blade that hungered for the very life force of these beings of fire. He didn't want the Baelor to figure that out, though, because he understood Baelors. Such cruel beings would play with their prey before the slaughter. So Driz rolled and screamed. The whip cracked very near and really did sting him, so he screamed again, then curled up, knees, elbows, and face on the hot floor. He heard the monster's approach, so confident the great demon didn't even try to mask it. Up went its huge foot to smash down on Driz. And the Drow Ranger swiftly rolled to his back and planted the pommel of Icing Death against the floor, holding on to it with all his strength and determination when the fiery demon stomped upon it. How the Baelor roared, how the Baelor thrashed! It hopped, howling as Icing Death ate at its life essence and kicked out with all of its gigantic strength, sending Driz spinning across the floor. The drow rolled, contorting his body perfectly to take the momentum of that throw and transfer it as he came up, leaping high and spinning a circle kick that drove his foot into the face of the pursuing behemoth.
A Balor would normally walk right through such a kick from a puny elf, but this was no ordinary strike. Driz's training with Grandmaster Kane had taught him to harness his own life energy and guide it through his limbs to devastating effect. So when his foot hit the demon's face, it snapped its head back, sending it staggering backward, a limping step, its red eyes unfocused, its tongue lolling out between jagged knife-like teeth. Driz would have liked nothing more than to charge in and engage, but the demon was not alone, far from it, and so many others appeared not so far away. His hesitation cost him. The Balor extended its giant bat wings and puffed up its chest, throwing forward one arm, reaching to full length with that awful whip. Driz felt the sting as he fled, sharp and full of fire and full of poison. Brunner watched nervously from the right-hand side of the defensive outer wall, far down from the tram station and above the gates Ivan had designated. A large group of fleeing dwarves came into view, running hard and with a horde of monsters close behind. The dwarf king winced every time a straggler got pulled down to be devoured by the demons. "Ye give 'em cover!" he shouted to the archers. "Shoot higher than a dwarf and lower than a demon, and kill them damned overgrown houseflies!" Crossbows began to sing out from the wall, but the volley seemed a pitiful thing against the sheer volume of the demonic press. "Run, me boys!" Brunner shouted at the retreating forces, banging his many notched axe against his shining shield. To me, for all your lives, to me!" A Khazme demon, ahead of the horde and ahead of the fleeing dwarves, dove down from the darkness above at the dwarven king. But Brunner saw it. With pure nerve, he held his posture, seemingly oblivious until the last second, then exploded in a fast turn, right arm coming about with all the speed and power the dwarf king could muster. And his axe, that legendary weapon, enchanted anew in the fire of the great forge of Gontalgrim, sheared right through the demon, human face to insect arse, splitting it neatly down the middle. The dwarves cheered, the crossbows fired anew. "Run, battle hammers!" a score of voices, then 100 voices implored their fleeing kin. Brunner glanced below, inside the wall, noting a team in place to swing wide those doors. He looked back a bit from the wall to see Pickle Boldershoulder standing resolutely, eyes closed and muttering something. "Trust the fool doodad," Brunner quietly reminded himself. The retreating dwarves neared the gates, and the crossbow volleys became more pointed and devastating, several archers working together to send a barrage into any major demons they could pick out among the charging monsters. "Gates!" Brunner yelled, but no sooner had the word escaped him than a cry came out from way down at the other end of the wall, far to the left, warning of a second horde of demons coming in strong. Brunner chewed his lip, thinking that it had to be Jarlaxle and Zacnaphane bringing the monsters to slaughter. But he couldn't be there, not now with a large group of fleeing battlehammers about to be overrun. He nodded as he reminded himself once more to trust in his forces, for that far end of the wall, left of the tram station, was the most fortified position of all, thick with artillery and commanded by capable generals. Below him, the gates swung open and in swarmed the fleeing battlehammers. The archers leaned over the parapets, plunking the leading demon pursuers, desperate to give some daylight. Still, they'd never get the gates closed in time, and many a dwarf cried out in concern. But Brunner just smiled, readied his axe and shield, and watched the first foray. He glanced at Pickle, who had his eyes opened wide now, his one arm up and fingers waggling. He watched the plants sprouting from the sand and through cracks in the stones, coming out to the call of the powerful and unusual dwarven druid. Those plants surprised the fleeing dwarves but did not trip them up. Those plants weren't even noticed by the ravenous horde until they began to grab at demon legs holding fast. "Well, get 'em!" Brunner heard Ivan Boldershoulder yell, and the air filled with the clanking of 100 heavy crossbows, launching large and very special quarrels at the slowed demons. Every bolt that hit, and almost all did, collapsed upon itself, the center vial shattering in the impact, the two heavy ends crashing together with the magical oil in between.
100 thunderous explosions sent demon bits flying and blew the front ends of the quarrels right through the struck beast, usually to take down a second, third, or even fourth behind it. Again, those crossbows sang, and unearthly howls and shrieks filled the cavern, and the smoke of melting demon corpses filled Brunner's nostrils. Such a beautiful, awful smell, at once the sweetest and most horrid stench in all the world. The fleeing battlehammers turned as one, Ivan's brigades rushing to join, archers reloading for a third devastating volley. "Close the gates!" yelled Malabriches when that third went off, cutting into the horde outside and thinning those demons inside so much that there was little doubt that Ivan and the others could tear them apart in short order. So yes, the logical move was to close the gates, secure the wall, put the horde back outside, and cut them down from the parapets. But King Brunner had another idea. "Battlehammer!" he yelled. And to the surprise of all, mighty King Brunner leaped down from the wall, not inside to join with Ivan Boldershoulder, but outside, among the disoriented and blasted demons. Despite the unexpected move, Queen's fist and fury were quickly down to flank him, demon bits flying every which way from each swing of that mighty axe. A score of shield dwarves, gutbusters all, the elite guard of King Brunner, rushed over the wall and surrounded their rulers, hungry for battle. And Ivan Boldershoulder and his boys ran over those demons caught inside the wall and didn't slow in coming through the gates, old Ivan himself the tip of that flying wedge of destruction. At the open gates, Ivan's archers trained their crossbows and explosive quarrels higher, and soon enough, shattered chasmes and other winged menaces swirled down like the whipping snows of an Icewind Dale blizzard. Jarlaxle leaned far to the left, hooked his fingers on a jag in the stone, and pulled himself around the base of a mound, rolling his feet and flipping over to keep his momentum as he cut the sharp turn. He had not time to slow, nor did Zacnaphane, who cut in behind the nearly horizontal Jarlaxle, leaped up upon the wide base of the stalagmite, kicked a forward flip to a higher spot, then a second, coming over the edge, straightening his legs to catch the downward slope and running down it with that same amazing agility that had marked his son's reputation. He hit the floor behind the rising and running Jarlaxle, but with more momentum behind him, enough so that he was quickly sprinting beside the rogue. Now they were in the last stretch of their run, the outer wall of Gauntlegrim in sight, with explosions and the screams and shrieks of battle echoing before them and to the left. Jarlaxle wondered if the dwarves had been pressed too hard in other areas. Was the coordinated defense that had been promised on this side of the tram already compromised? The mercenary put it out of his thoughts. He had no time for that. He had no time for anything but moving forward. He and Zacnaphane ran on, a full sprint here, the last couple hundred strides to the wall. And then what? For there was no open gate before them, no ropes or ladders hanging down to help them up to safety. Trap doors opened on the wall face, revealing the gleaming barbed tips of huge ballista bolts. Two other flaps of the wall fell away, showing side slinger catapults stacked atop each other, ready to let fly. And dwarves appeared atop the wall, heavy crossbows leveling. "Don't wait for us," Zacnaphane screamed, to which Jarlaxle gasped, "What?" Atop the wall, some dwarves let fly, aiming up high, quarrels whipping out, some hitting demons, other stalactites, and all collapsing and exploding powerfully, beautifully. "Let him fly, boys!" came a cry from the wall. Zacnaphane yelled, expecting to catch the coming barrage square in the face. He thought it ridiculous that he had returned to this life, to his son, only to be killed so quickly. And for dwarves? Still, these were Drizzt's friends, he reminded himself. If his last act in this rebirth was to aid in that defense, then so be it. He would have to trust Jarlaxle and his son, that the sacrifice would be worth it. He yelled again when he heard the crossbows and ballistae from the wall firing, expecting to die. But then, so suddenly, he was flying, falling across a sudden pit, slamming into the other side and clawing at the floor to hold his precarious perch. "Let go, you fool!" Jarlaxle yelled behind him. Then Zacnaphane understood, and as the ballista let fly, two huge spears soaring forth with a heavy and sharp chain bound between them, and as the side-slingers, 1, 2, 3 left, and 1, 2, 3 right, flung their payloads, Jarlaxle and Zacnaphane fell into the magical hole, Jarlaxle taking the back lip of the hole with him, Zacnaphane inadvertently taking the front lip with him, as they tumbled down together, turning the pit into an extra-dimensional space. They were away from the carnage, though they heard it, the demonic shrieks of surprise and pain, and they smelled it as demon corpses melted to the abyssal fumes that would take the host's life essence back to the lower planes. In the darkness, though, they couldn't see it. The carnage and chaos intensified when the first juicers rolled across to that left-hand slaughter lane. The artillery and crossbow barrage had already destroyed so many demons and had created confusion among the remaining fiends, which turned many of them upon each other. The juicers did good work taking care of the rest, but there were always more. With Brunner, Fist, and Fury taking the lead, the dwarves weren't about to surrender their advantage. They came on in perfect support and coordination, the juicers slicing lines through the demon block, the dwarven wedge formations catching the remnants and cutting them apart. And right there was the king at the angle of one such wedge, willing his charges on behind him, his mighty axe so steeped in the power of Gontalgrim's forge, and with a wielder so steeped in the strength of the magical throne of the dwarven gods, chopping through any defense the demons tried to offer. As the dwarves pressed down the lane, passing the unseen haven of the two drow, Jarlaxle peeked out of his portable hole. The demon horde had already been decimated, and those remaining, surprisingly, had turned tail and were fleeing back across the entry cavern, back the way they had come, the dwarven forces in hot pursuit. "When did demons learn to retreat?" Zacnaphane asked, but Jarlaxle could only shrug. The Baelor's laughter receded as the ranger sped away, winding through the stalagmite maze. It thought the poison would kill Drizzt, surely. And had Drizzt been a lesser being, had he not been trained by the Grand Master of Flowers, it might well have done so. Even as he ran, the drow flexed and unclenched his muscles, feeling the poison in the wound, pushing it back out of his flesh. By the time he had made his third turn, the poison had been defeated, and on the ranger ran. When he reached the far edge of the cavern, Drizzt too was surprised by the sudden and violent turn of events over by the outer wall, by the sheer carnage so suddenly inflicted on the demon invaders. He moved off to the side as far as he could manage, finding a sheltered hole beside the entrance of the causeway, from which he could launch a barrage of lightning arrows. He let the first of the demons move past, minor fiends and mostly the misshapen, zombie-like manes. Whenever a major demon approached, Drizzt noted its turn to the right, moving across the cavern to the exit causeway, which made sense because just a few dozen strides in there, the creatures would be effectively running downhill instead of making the steep climb all the way to the surface of this tunnel. They herded all of the minor demons, their fodder, into this uphill one, though, likely to split the dwarven pursuing force. A wise move, but Drizzt couldn't quite understand it all. They were retreating. These were demons, and they were running away and taking their fodder, which they considered expendable with them. The drow ranger eased out of his sheltered cubby into view of the next approaching manes, who seemed not to notice him and kept their course for the tunnel. Purely on a hunch, Drizzt took a chance, leveling Tolmeril and letting fly at the group, blasting a hole in one mane and then the second behind it, both falling to smoking husks. Even with this attack, the rest kept up their determined march for the causeway entrance and the rising tunnel beyond. Drizzt's immediate reaction was to take advantage of this unusual and unexpected circumstance, and he put Tolmeril to devastating effect, blasting away at the moving horde. Manes fell two or three at a time, chasmes spun down from above, shattered by the enchanted missiles of the bow known as the Heartseeker. Drizzt kept firing, and even moved into the cavern's tram entry tunnel, climbing up behind the manes and other minor demons, throwing lightning arrow after lightning arrow through their ranks, expecting them to turn. but they still did not. Something was very wrong here. He came back out of the tunnel into the cavern to see another group of demons approaching, and with fierce fighting, no, not fighting, but slaughter close behind, the dwarves rolling out in pursuit, chopping the monsters down. Across the way seemed quieter now, but a second group of dwarves was coming on strong, Driz noted, mostly from the explosive crossbow quarrels, blasting off stones and through the straggler demons. The fact that he couldn't figure out why they were retreating chilled Driz. He knew it was reckless, but he blew the whistle hanging about his neck to summon Andahar anyway. He leaped up and the unicorn sprang away up the tram tunnel. Driz led the way with a barrage of arrows, then collapsed the bow back into his belt buckle and drew out both scimitars. He did not need to guide Andahar with his hands, for the magical steed understood his telepathic commands. He closed on the back rows of fleeing demons, who remained heedless of his approach, and he urged Andahar right through them, trampling the monsters directly in line, while Driz's blades destroyed those to either side. He knew it was risky, perhaps even stupid. Would the monsters suddenly turn on him and catch him in between two demon hordes? But he had to find out what this was all about. Andahar charged up the slope. More demons fell to the horn and hooves and flashing scimitars. A commotion far up ahead had Driz squeezing his legs and leaning back while telepathically screaming at the mount to stop. With his keen vision, Driz could see that something was happening. He just wasn't sure what. The mains and other minor fiends were now scrambling to the sides of the tunnel, but he couldn't quite make out why. He pulled Tolmeril again and let fly a lightning arrow straight up the tunnel, aiming for nothing but distance. Driz's eyes widened, and he suddenly understood. For there, far ahead, but coming down at him with speed, he saw the beast, a monstrous spider skittering down the tunnel along the ceiling. He knew instinctively that this wasn't merely a giant spider, or even one of the guardian jade spiders he had seen in Menzo Baranzon. No. From the way the demons were avoiding this animated catastrophe, he knew. This was a demon lord, likely, or some other horror from the lower planes. He let fly another arrow, then a third, aiming higher. The first hit the ceiling just before the charging monster, which didn't slow, while the second caught the spider right in the face, or seemed to by the flash of explosive lightning. But again, the spider didn't slow, and if the magical arrow had done it any harm at all, Driz couldn't see it. "What monster is this?" he whispered. And he let fly again and again, the arrows rushing up the tunnel to score two more hits. Or maybe not, he couldn't tell, and the creature never slowed. The spider rushed down the tunnel, and Driz spun Andahar about to flee. Too late, he realized. Jarlaxle and Zachnephane spilled out of the extra-dimensional hole onto the floor of the cavern, before the dwarven wall, and amid the carnage, demon bits and limbs and blood and brains.
"Warn me when you throw that,"
Zachnephane scolded, still gasping for breath and certain that he had cracked more than one rib when he had flown across the sudden pit to slam into the opposite wall of it. Jarlaxle wasn't really listening, but rather was taking in the lay of the battle. The dwarves were far away by then and moving farther. He could see the light of their torches and hear their calls of victory. Zachnephane moved past him.
"Are you coming?"
But Jarlaxle shook his head. "No reason," he said, and motioned for Zachnephane to follow him the other way back to the wall, where rope ladders were dropped for them by the remaining sentries. Up and over they went and back into the complex proper, through the throne room, where Jarlaxle heard a whisper in his head and recognized the call. He pulled Zachnephane with him into a side chamber to find Kimuriel O'Blodra waiting for him.
"What do you know?" he asked. "What word from Luskin?"
"None yet," Kimuriel answered. "The armada approaches, but that is not why I have come to you."
"Pray tell then," said Zachnephane, drawing a scowl from the psionicist, who rather petulantly tightened his lips and crossed his skinny arms over his chest.
"Leave us," Jarlaxle ordered Zachnephane immediately, and with a snort, the weapon master went back out into the corridor.
Jarlaxle looked at his lieutenant curiously. You're not really here, are you?
In thought, the specter answered.
Where in body?
On a ship out of Luskan, sailing to learn of our enemies.
But you find the need to speak with me before you have the answers, said Jarlaxle, in a tone that made clear his intrigue and worry. It was not like Kimoriel to travel side streets when on an important mission.
You should know what soon comes against you, the psionicist explained. Matron Jindia Milarn has taken the field with a demon horde.
At which I am not the least bit surprised, Jarlaxle replied.
She brought friends, tools of great power, two of them with specific goals.
Demon lords?
Demon constructs.
Jarlaxle's face screwed up in confusion as he scoured his own thoughts for any hint of what that might mean.
One for Drizzt, and one for Zaknafane, Kimoriel added.
Jarlaxle paused another moment before his eyes went wide and his jaw went slack. He hurried to find his oldest friend.